Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving with Rusty. Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and guess what? I'm Rusty. Today's a very special day because every Thursday I get to bring you some amazing authors, speakers, writers, shamans, priests, priestesses, and just all around amazing people from all over the world. And I get to share their story of what inspires them to be them and what inspires them to do what they do. Today I have Joyce Fields on. She has written so many books, I can't even tell you. I think it's like 1 million or something like that. But she's going to tell us all about it, aren't you, Joyce?
Yes, I am.
Hi, sweet girl. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. My motto is too blessed to be stressed. How are you?
Amen, girl. Too blessed to be stressed with me, too. Shoot.
Yeah.
Now, I always start the show very simple. It's you and I sitting on the couch having a cocktail, and we discuss who we are and what we do and what inspires us to inspire other people. So, Joyce, who are you and what do you do?
Well, Rusty, I am a whole lot of things. I'm a wife, a mother, a grandmother, a great-grandmother, an aunt, a sister, and an author. I'm also a retired executive assistant.
What inspires you to get up every morning?
Just life in general. I'm excited about my blessings.
All right. And you've written a bazillion books, right?
I've written 10 books. I wrote
my
first one in 1997.
Holy cow, you've been at this for a while. I've only written 9, and it's arduous.
Don't say
journey.
Only.
I think it's like raising children to write a book. You really have to be able to pull out your hair and love yourself and get mad at yourself and do everything all over again last minute, right? It's a process.
Yes, it is a process.
Talk to us a little bit about why you've written so many books and what excites you. I mean, what are the books? I know one's a recipe book, but you've written a plethora of books. So talk to us a little bit about that.
The first one that I wrote is entitled Line of Serenity. That was in 1997. I'm the oldest of 7, and we never had sibling rivalry. And all I remember about growing up is there was so much calmness and peace in our home, and that was a major accomplishment because being the oldest of 7, then the 2 parents and a Doberman Pinscher puppy, so that's the way that we grew up. And like I said, we never had sibling rivalry, so I wanted to capture the way our parents raised us with love and affection and attention and all of that. I didn't want it to be gone when we all died off. So I wanted to document the way that our parents raised us. And it goes from 1944, the year I was born, to 1977, the year that our mother passed on. And it has pictures of all of our ancestors, and not all, but, going back to our grandparents. And then it also has 21 recipes, delicious recipes, my own recipes. And so that was why, food is a very important part of our family, still is. And it was, and it still is. But so that's why I wanted to have the recipes in there. And then the pictures in there are of a lot of our relatives that are on, had passed away. And I wanted to include the pictures so that the kids in the family could see that, oh, this little girl looks just like Aunt Lou or whomever, and so they could see the pictures of them. So a lot of people who were not in my family read the book, the manuscript, and said that I should publish it because a lot of families would be interested in the way that we were raised without sibling rivalry and so forth. So that was the first book that I wrote. It's 167.
I think that's really exciting. And what an adventure to write about your childhood and your family. I mean, you couldn't get more inspired than reliving your childhood. And how cool that you guys didn't fight or argue. That's kind of unusual, don't you think?
Yeah, very. And we still don't. I'm 75, and my youngest sister, the youngest sibling, just turned 66.
Wow. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about your other books? I'm going to mute you out because I'm going to have some noise in the background, and I don't want to diminish your story. I think it's very important for everybody to hear. So tell us about a couple of your other books and what inspired you to write them.
Okay. The next book, now I wrote that one in 1997, Line of Serenity. Then I wrote Mother's Dozen, An Easy Recipe for Raising Great Kids, in 2003. So I didn't write again until 2003 with Mother's Dozen. And I was inspired to write that one because I see so many young girls that treat their babies like they're just like little dolls, and they don't treat them like they're a human being that's going to grow up. They put all these designer clothes on babies, and babies don't care what they're wearing. They probably are happier with nothing on at all. So then I wrote the a lot of the young girls don't seem to know about teaching children manners and all kinds of things that are involved in raising a child.
And I agree with you. I don't think that babies really care what they're dressed as. I think they just care that they're being given attention to. So that's really cool
exactly.
That you did that.
Yeah, and so this one is called Mother's Dozen, An Easy Recipe for Raising Great Kids. And the foreword was written by a minister of, he's retired now, he was the senior minister of one of the largest churches in Los Angeles. And he says that Mother's Dozen is a handbook of excellence in raising children. It systematizes the rules passed from generation to generation regarding preparing children for the world to come. And that's the way he starts out with his foreword. I was really floored when I submitted the manuscript to a lot of the major publishing companies, and they said that they don't publish these kinds of manuscripts or books unless they are from a celebrity or a minister or a psychologist or something like that. So I did the next best thing, and I sent the manuscript through email to Reverend Murray, who is the pastor that I mentioned, and he sent me back this forward, and it was just awesome. If I hadn't been sitting down, I'd have probably passed out. I was just so impressed with his forward. Now, the ingredients that I call in A Simple Recipe for Raising Great Kids start from infancy. Number two is manners. Number three is love for learning. Number four is responsibility. Number five, rules, order, and organization. Number six is independence. Seven is spirituality or a higher power. Number eight is affection. Number nine is discipline and self-control. Number 10 is feed the child's interests. And number 11 is obedience. And number 12 is patience. So that's Mother's Dozen. Those are the 12 things that I highlighted in raising children.
So go through those one by one and give us an example as to how we can be better parents with each of those examples that you gave. Like, I really believe our kids need to be independent because they're human, and that's kind of what we're focused on. If you don't mind, just give a little bit of a high-level overview of each of those.
Okay. Now, infancy. Start from infancy. Let's see. I had already learned that when your baby is born, it must be trained to live the way its family lives. So you do not alter your lifestyle. You allow the child to move into how you live your life. You don't alter it for the baby unless you're doing some really strange things. But babies can't talk, but they are super intelligent. They learn what they live. I was going to train my child, and he was not going to train me. And that's one of the attitudes that I think is missing in parenting. You don't allow your child to train you. Manners. It's terrible to see young children, teenagers, and grown folks who show a total lack of manners. You teach your child manners by being mannerable to your child. You say please and thank you, excuse me, and all of that, and that's how they learn. I'm just kind of briefly going over some of the highlights here. Teach them a love for learning. Education is one of the most important things in a child's life, and it doesn't begin when the child starts school. It begins in infancy, at home. Some people believe it starts in the womb, maybe, and that's what I'm thinking here in the book, as I say. Responsibility. You can't wait until a child is 10 or 12 years old to start trying to teach responsibility. I started with my child when he was around 18 months old. That's old enough to pick up toys and put them where they belong. That's old enough to put dirty clothes in the hamper. That's old enough to make a good attempt at cleaning up any mess that he made. I would finish the job. So that's another thing. You have to teach them responsibility. As he got older, more responsibility was added. When he was 5, he had to sweep the kitchen floor every day. Keeping his room clean was an ongoing responsibility. Of course, it was never clean enough for me, but it was his room, so I eased up a little.
It's really important for kids to have responsibility, but also have ownership to what they're doing. So it's never going to be good enough for us because we have our own way of doing things, and kids have to learn to have their own way of doing things. And I think it's really awesome that you were able to ease up.
Yes. You got to teach them rules, order, and organization. My mother had 7 children, as I was stating, and I'm the oldest, and she ran her house with rules, order, and organization. Without rules, order, and organization, we all probably would have been raving lunatics. Instead, our house was always calm, and we never spent a lot of time looking for anything. That is even, that was really amazing to me, that I really got grown before I realized how, with 7 people, well, 9 people really in the house because of the 2 parents, we never looked for anything. Whenever anybody used anything, they always put it back where it went so that it was available for the next person who came to use it. We never lost anything. Rules, order, and organization.
Now
wherever we lived, we usually had 2 bathrooms. When preparing for school, we would get up 2 kids at a time, 1 for each bathroom, starting with the oldest. When the first 2 finished, they would wake up the next 2, and so on down the line. So, and when you turn 12, you learn how to use the stove. Mama taught us how to use the stove when we turned 12 years old. So that was, we started cooking our own oatmeal and cream of wheat.
Your mama was brave to allow you to do that. Lord, I'd be scared.
Yeah. Well, she watched us, though, so. But.
Yeah.
And then you got to teach them independence. I have always enjoyed watching shows about the animal kingdom, of which we humans are a part. virtually all mammals teach their young to be able to go off on their own and fend for themselves. And it's no different for human beings. So, and that's what you have to teach them, independence. Spirituality, a higher power. When I was growing up, religion was an option. We did not have to go to church, but we were taught to believe in God. We said grace before we ate, and we said our prayers before we got into bed. So you had to teach her about spirituality. And there's a lot more to these chapters, but I'm just kind of skimming through them. Discipline and self-control. Business before pleasure. Develop good habits. They make life easier. Do it right. You won't have to do it over. A stitch in time saves nine. Look before you leap. Think before you speak. If put into practice, all these sayings help to develop discipline. They help you to control your behavior. So that you have to teach the kids to be disciplined and self-controlled. Feed the child's interests. Now, when my son was growing up, whenever he really kind of latched on to, I made sure that he had enough of it to satisfy his interests and all. So he's a rapper right now, and he's an entertainer and a good one. Teach your kids obedience. The old folks called it mind, M-I-N-D. I wanted my son to mind me. When I told him to do something, he learned that he'd better do it. When I told him not to do something, he learned that he'd better not do it. The reason why he didn't do it was because he also learned that there would be negative consequences to bear, and he didn't like negative consequences. So you have to teach your child that there are going to be consequences and teach them obedience, and if they're not obedient, then they're going to have to suffer the consequences.
Well, and I want to back up on that, Joyce. I want to really get to what we mean by obedience. It's not like obedience in the sense of treating your child like a dog. It's obedience in the sense of just being mindful and respectful to elders and to themselves. Because when you're respectful to other people, you're respectful to yourself.
Yes,
and
you sure
I think
are. That's where you learned it.
That's right. And I think sometimes we confuse that with more of dictatorship or megalomaniac type behavior. And that doesn't help a child cope or have a proper skill set as an adult.
Mm-hmm. And see, I cover a lot in this book, the 12 ingredients that I call them. And it's really an investment in yourself when you raise a child.
Yeah,
to be a good person. Yeah,
well,
so you don't have to worry about it.
I think it's really terribly important to make sure that when you are raising your child, you're able to raise that child to be not only respectful to their current environment, but a huge asset to the world. When I had my daughter, I looked at her and I'm like, I want you to be a value, an asset, something that people can look up to and have leadership and respect by. And I think sometimes parents don't think that far ahead when they have children. They're just like, oh, I have a child. Oh, gosh, what do I do? It's a bundle of, oh, my God.
Yes. So you have to, obedience comes with consequences, negative and positive. So,
exactly.
And you can, when mothers tell their children, I'll be back, then they get busy doing something else and don't get back as quickly as they should have. The children are learning that they have time to do whatever because their mothers won't be back immediately. Mothers tell their children that they cannot have a cookie or some other treat because the children didn't do as they were told. Then the mothers apparently feel terrible for depriving their children of the cookie or treat because in the next few minutes the children are happily munching on a cookie or enjoying their treat while silently shouting, gotcha.
Tell talk to us a little bit about some of the consequences your children had when they were growing up. It doesn't sound like you've had a hard time as a parent. It sounds like your kids turned out to be really pretty amazing. But I'm sure they had consequences at times, right?
Oh, most definitely. He would be on punishment. And so he used to say, one of my brothers came over when he was about, when my son was about 3 years old. And he asked him how come he wasn't out playing. And he said, it's because I'm on punimish.
Punimish.
Yeah, he was three. So, and I still talk about that to this day. He's 49 now. But it still was funny to me how he said he was on punimish. He couldn't say punishment. So he's on punishment. So you have to punish your children for, you don't do it brutally. You take away things that they enjoy, you know. So, you know, they think about that. I can't do this because this is what I want to do. I want to do this later, so I can't do this now. So, but at any rate, you know, you have to let them be able to think for themselves about the consequences. Did that answer your question?
Absolutely. I think that we have a hard time. We have mixed signals. Society has given us mixed signals. I was raised in the South, and if you did something wrong at your neighbor's house, your neighbor would whip your ass all the way up to your mama, and your mama would whip your ass all the way into the house. That's just the way it was.
That's right. That's the way it was with us, too, because all the people in the neighborhood could give you a whipping.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, it was.
I know.
You know, and if you were naughty, your parents would make you pick your own switch, and you had to choose.
Oh yeah.
And we didn't get
whipped with a switch. We my parents used a belt. My husband's parents used a switch.
Nope, I got the switch. I got the belt. I even got the spatula and a couple of wooden spoons. Wooden spoons didn't last very long. I could go down the line.
But yeah, so we need to get back to. Raising these children correctly. So, I don't know. But the book is out there. It's $7.99, and it is 48 pages. God bless me with the talent for being succinct. I can say a lot in a few words. And it makes an excellent gift as a baby shower gift.
I think parents have a contradictory role now, and one of the things that I really want to try to pull out of your wisdom and knowledge is how do we not be so confused as to what discipline is, because now you can't even let your child walk down to the park without getting arrested for organic parenting, as they call it, which I think is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I know.
Some states don't even allow you to have your children walk down to the park. Dumbest thing. Don't understand it. Don't know where these people came from. I don't even know if they ever had parents or childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just sitting here going, that's what kids are supposed to do.
Yeah.
But again, as a young parent, it's very contradictory because you have our generation and your generation. We come from a little bit of a hard knock school, and I'm not saying that that's the way we should revert back to. I'm just saying there's got to be a balance, something in the middle. And it's hard for parents to know what that is because there's so much misinformation.
Yeah, there really is.
What are your thoughts?
A lot of it has to do with images that we see on television, and now these kids have these video games, which I think are really awful because it's teaching them total disrespect for human life, all this stuff about, you know, and the video games now are showing people being beheaded and all kinds of stuff, and that's really messing up the minds of children. And they're they're just being scared. You know, this whole world is very scary for them now.
Well,
now they, you know, back in our day, you know, we didn't even have to think about it. It wasn't a thought in our head as far as being kidnapped. You never even heard about that kind of stuff.
We could go out and play
and be all, you know, when the streetlights came on and we'd have to be home, but we could roam all over the whole city with thoughts of fear.
My bike down to the 7-Eleven and get candy, and I would have a little note to get my smother cigarettes and Mountain Dew.
Yeah. You know?
And I'd ride my bike back and give her cigarettes and her Mountain Dew.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays.
But now you won't. You can't do that nowadays. You can't send your children to the store alone.
Nope.
You know, so it's a different world. It's like I said, I think that a lot of it has to do with the images that we see, because we had TV shows. I'm an African-American female, but we didn't see very many African-Americans unless they were in really demeaning roles, gangsters and butlers and almost slaves. But at any rate, the images that we saw were really good as far as trying to promote the sensibilities of children, because children were respectful in those shows. You know, My Three Sons, Leave It to Beaver, they were all white people, but they still had some nuggets of good child rearing in them. So then we did get to see people of color long time after that. But like I said, that we still had good child rearing philosophies in those shows.
I think it's a challenge because we're evolving and shaking and changing as a society, as a universe, as a community, as even in our religious doctrine, we're finding that there's more extremism than ever. And it's a growth period. We have a growth spurt, and I think it's challenging because there's so much information, and it contradicts itself. No matter how you shake that, it's just contradictory to some other information that we get. And I think the world is kind of confused right now, don't you?
You think the world is what?
Confused.
Oh, my God,
yes. I think we have a lot of confusion.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, so we're really putting priorities in the wrong places. So I wrote another book called, in 2003 I wrote Mother's Dozen, An Easy Recipe for Raising Great Kids. In 2008, 5 years later, I wrote The Best Way to Keep a Man is to Let Him Go, among other things. My husband and I have been together for 62 years, since we were 13 years old. And we've been married for 52 years. And I wrote this book because I see so many young women that don't understand the dynamics of keeping a relationship together, keeping it healthy and happy and sexy and all of that.
And I think as a young woman in our society, I came from a very dysfunctional background, like most people, and I didn't have the greatest role model for relationship building at all. And I see that more and more and more, and I'm raising my own daughter, and I'm kind of scratching my head going, how do I give her the best ideology of
how
a relationship should be? She's 14 now. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. You don't even have what?
I don't even have a solid foundation of what that means. My marriage was a failure. It was very abusive. So I was raised in that environment. I married into a similar environment, and now I'm out, and I'm very happy with life. I don't have
a
relationship.
I'm sure you are.
But I worry about her perception of what a healthy relationship would be because, well, she wasn't really raised with one.
Well, I would suggest that you get this book, The Best Way to Keep a Man is to Let Him Go, among other things, and give it to her when she's a little bit older, maybe 16.
Okay.
You know, I know there's nothing explicit in it at all, but I don't know about, you can read it first and see if you can, because The Best Way to Keep a Man is to Let Him Go, among other things. So the chapters in here include Modify the Way You Think, Observe and Learn Your Man, Be willing and ready to pay your dues. Fantasy versus reality. Learn how to fight. Remember that you have faults too. Nothing is too precious for him. Think before you speak. Always be a lady. If he has children, accept and treat them as your own. Don't take man advice from a woman who has no man. Look good 99% of the time. Don't use sex as a weapon. That's a really big one. Don't use sex as a weapon. A lot of women get really mad at their men and won't give them any sex. So that's a horrible thing to do because you're depriving yourself as well. But don't depend on your man to make you happy. You have to be happy before you get with a person. They're not going to do it for you. They're not even responsible for doing that. Pray and laugh together. The way to a man's heart is through his stomach. And so this book is 64 pages, which includes 21 pages of recipes, because I said the last chapter is the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. So I didn't want to leave the ladies in a lurch and not give them any recipes. A lot of these young girls now take pride in the fact that they don't cook, can't cook, don't want to learn how to cook, and that's not smart. So I give recipes.
And I think the world's changing a little bit. I absolutely love cooking. I find it very meditative.
I love it too.
But I also love it when my man can cook for me.
Yep. And see, my son can cook too. So I taught him how to cook when he was 12 years old, how to cook everything. So there's really good recipes in this book. And I talk about don't take man advice from a woman who has no man, and a lot of girls do that. They'll listen to their girlfriends. That's the wrong thing to do.
Now, expand on that. Explain to me why you think that would be a wrong thing to do.
In most cases, they're talking to, well, that's what I said. Don't take man advice from a woman who has no man. And don't take man advice from a woman who's in a bad relationship. Because what can they tell you? You know, so most of the time, the world is so full of ugliness. Most of the time, the girl that you talk to will be cheering that you're in a bad relationship. You know, misery loves company. Don't talk to those kinds of people. You know, talk to the ones whose relationship seems to be good. And not only that, but when you talk to your friend about your man, then all of a sudden she's telling you to leave him and put him out and all that stuff. And guess who's going to be right in line to get him?
Oh, now. I don't know about that. But, all right. So talk to us. We've got about 19 minutes left of the show. And I want you to give us an idea of where we can find you. Do you have a website or anything, Joyce?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. The website is goodshortbooks.com. And all the books are true to the website's name. They're good and they're short. My sister wrote one book, and it's about dogs. If you like dogs, you'll love her book. And I wrote 10. Goodshortbooks.com. Facebook, I'm at Joyce Fields, as well as goodshortbooks.com on Facebook. Twitter is at goodshortbooks. And Instagram is JJ, the letters JJ Fields 7, and then the number 7. JJ Fields 7 on Instagram. And my email is goodshortbooks@yahoo.com.
Now, Joyce, what is your favorite thing to wake up to? Like, what do you just jump out of bed saying every morning? What gets you excited?
First of all, I thank God. for waking me up. That's the first thing I do. Then I, and what gets me excited is just living life, you know, just going through my daily routines, you know, of posting on social media, cooking, washing, cleaning, you know, just looking out at the, there's a gorgeous tree, right? I'm looking at it right now out the front window. And we live in townhouse community. And the landscaping is just beautiful when I look out at it, and it's just so beautiful. It's just, you know, I'm just enjoying life, period.
I think it's a miracle every morning that I wake up. I absolutely love my I love my bed. I love my blanket. I love waking up my dogs and my daughter. And during the school year, my daughter in the summer is with her father, but during the school year, she's with me.
Mm-hmm.
And every single morning, she curls up with me and the dogs. And that's the biggest blessing that I can have is that time with
mm-hmm.
her. And I feel very blessed that she's 14 and she still curls up with me. Life is really short, don't you think? I mean, even,
I know.
Even though you're 75,
yes,
you're very young, especially in this world.
Well, that's why I always say when people ask me how I'm doing, I say I'm too blessed to be stressed. And I think that that's the case for everybody if you think about it. Even people, I look at stuff on Facebook, and this guy, I don't know what his name is, but he was born without arms and legs. And he
he's amazing.
Yeah. And so all of this, we're just blessed. And he is even looking at himself as being blessed. No arms and no legs. How, if he can look at himself as being blessed, then there's no reason why we shouldn't. We got arms and legs, though.
He's got a beautiful wife and beautiful children, and he made his life. He stayed in that blessed ideology and really felt it, loved it, owned it, and wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got a full life.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, and I want to tell you about another book that I wrote, and this one is called Dear Bully, A Collection of Poems About Bullying. And I wrote this one in 2011 because it just broke my heart that children were committing suicide as a result of bullying. And bullying has been around, I'm 75 years old, and it was around when I was growing up. But it wasn't kids. I never heard of anybody committing suicide because of bullying. Kids would fight, and then the next day they'd be friends again, that kind of stuff. And so I wrote 25 poems in 6 hours. It just absolutely, God just put it into me, and it poured out.
Do you have one of those 20, poems you can read for us?
Yes, I do. Let me see. I hadn't planned on going through this book, but
I said nothing's ever planned on this show, and that's what I love about it. I love
Okay. Now here's one. Dear Bully, sending mean stuff on your computer or texting it on your phone is no way to deal with anyone. It's better to leave them alone. Cyberbullying is just as bad as doing it face-to-face. It's nothing to be proud of. It's really a total disgrace. Instead of sending mean stuff, start a cyber friendship chain. Include the kids you bullied, and then you all will gain a better way of living, more smiles in all your days, using your computers and your phones in smart and friendly ways.
I love it. And that's right. If you can use your time with whatever device you have, even if it's your mouth or your mind, and do it in a friendly way, life is so beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I have one more I wanted to read to you, too. This one is my favorite one.
I love that.
Dear Bully, how did you feel when you heard that I had committed suicide? Did you laugh and shout with glee, or did you want to run and hide? I was afraid to be in your presence. I was afraid when I heard your voice. I wanted to go to school each day, but your actions gave me no choice. Now I am gone and out of your reach, but this is not what I wanted. I just couldn't take it anymore. I was tired of being taunted.
It's so sad. I was the only white girl in most of my schools, and that was an issue within itself. And my name is Rusty, so that caused even a bigger issue because it rhymes with absolutely everything growing up in the South, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I used to get my butt whooped all the time at school just for my color. And
wow.
Oh, yeah. I have scars on my back. This little girl, Candy, she jumped up and, like, started biting me in the back. It was horrible. But, you know, I learned how to run. So that was a highlight of my life then. And I never thought once of committing suicide because of that. Isn't that interesting?
Know.
Like,
see,
we never,
but yeah,
we,
but see,
we got bullied. But
yeah, but see, this is what's going on, though. The images and the words that these kids are hearing makes that an option for them. Suicide.
Yeah.
See, we never heard that.
I will tell you that when I was really, really little, I put a plastic bag over my head wanting to sleep forever. It wasn't suicide to what we understand suicide to be now. It was a way to sleep forever. That's all I knew it as.
Mm.
At that time, I was being sexually abused. So that's that's a whole reaction, a consequence to other people's actions. But I think innately we have that ideology, but I think with society, the way we've, I think, digressed, not grown, I think we've gone backwards mentally. We teach on TV and we teach on the radio and we teach this ideology that self-destruction is okay. That's what we're
That's exactly what I'm saying. So, you know, and that's not good. My goal is for every child 8 to 12 years old to have Dear Bully, because it's written for the bullied and for the bully himself. Here's one here. Dear Bully, I'm talking to myself. Oh, yes, I am, because I am the bully. That's me. I'm very unhappy. I don't like my life. I want you to be miserable, you see. You give me satisfaction when I see you cringe. I know that my plan will work. Since I'm very unhappy and I don't like myself, I'm acting like a jerk. That was written from the perspective of the bully.
I think, so let's get into it. We have a few minutes, and I really wanted, and again, you're 75, I'm 43, so we have a few years in between us, and a little bit of a time, we have a time capsule, which I really enjoy, because my generation is the last generation to play on the streets, have puppy bikes, skin our knees, you know, have our middle name called before dark, that whole time period, and which you understand. The new generation is all texting, Google, security systems, paranoid stuff.
Yeah,
so
I think social media
I
should be called anti-social media.
Exactly right, in some respects. Mm-hmm. It depends on how you use it, like with anything.
Yeah, it does.
But,
you know, so you can use it for those relatives that are far away, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, but other than that, I don't think that, you know, all the social media is good.
Perspectively, do you think that bullies have become more prevalent than they were when we were children? Like, do you think there's more of them because?
Oh, yeah. And I don't like to bring politics into it, but Donald Trump is the biggest bully I've ever seen.
Lord, girl, preach. I completely agree. But, you know, and that's an example of
that's why we're getting more of them.
Yeah. But I think I wonder if by removing the ability to have mental creation, to build forts, we used to, when we woke up in the morning, we had our Rice Krispies if we were lucky. We were kicked out. The door was locked. We didn't come home until dusk. That was just the way it was. And that was every household from Wichita, Kansas to Burlington, Vermont. You know, like that's just the way it was. Now we have restricted our children to basically four walls and a computer. And,
yes.
And some
a TV.
I think we've dumbed them down because they don't have survival skills. They don't know what a can opener is. They don't know how to do their own laundry. And I'm not speaking for every household because my child does because I'm that mom. But and there's a lot of people out there like me who are
my son was doing his own washing and ironing when he was 10.
Yeah.
Not because I couldn't
again,
do it, but because I wanted to teach him how to do it for himself.
Your son's a little older than I am, so he doesn't count in this conversation. I'm talking about the kids from, like, say, 1985 on.
Okay, I got you.
Okay, because that's really when technology started taking over and television started taking over and commercialism and all that nonsense. But I wonder if we were to pull the plug and have these children, and I just think they'd be zombies at first, but have these children go out into the world like we did, building forts and catching frogs and playing with tadpoles and having to rewire
their brains. Playing hopscotch and shooting marbles.
Like, oh, yeah. Girl, I got in trouble for doing marbles. My birth mother used to whip me good. She's like, that's gambling. Used to take my marbles away every single time. Beat my ass for gambling. Lord, I tell you.
Oh, God.
But, yeah. So, marbles, hopscotch, jump rope. Growing up in the South, jump rope was a big thing.
Yeah. And in the book, Line of Serenity, I talk about all of that, you know, how we used to play all these games, hide and go seek and rock school. All kinds of we had to literally use our imaginations to play. These kids nowadays don't have to use their imaginations. All the thinking is being done for them.
Exactly right. And it's kind of scary to
watch. And that's not good.
Nope. All right, so I'm going to be wrapping up this radio show, and I'm so grateful to have met you, Joyce. You have a wonderful attitude and a lot of information that's valuable. And I virtually hug you and thank you so much for being on the show.
And I virtually hug you back.
I'll take it, girl. I love hugs.
Yeah, I do too. And we're a loving, hugging cousins. And, you know, all the way down to the cousins, we hug when we see each other and hug when we part from each other.
Absolutely.
So.
But, this is
but go to goodshortbooks.com and check out all the books there. They're ranging price from $7.99 to $12.99. They won't break you. They'll stay with you longer than a pizza and a pop.
Amen to that. But give us your last few words. What are your last few words that you want the audience to take away from today? Because, you know, you have such a wealth of wisdom and knowledge and experience.
Well, my thing is, I also have a book of quotes, My Simple Quotes to Live By. So I'm going to leave you with the very first quote that I coined when I was 15 years old. I didn't know that I was coining a quote, but they asked the seniors in middle school. I don't know if you can have a senior, but at any rate, there was a middle school graduation, and they asked the graduating class to leave words behind for the ones to follow. And so I put in, never lose your hope and faith, and that has carried me from that day that I coined the quote to this day. I'm an 8-year breast cancer survivor, and that has carried me through breast cancer and an 8-year stroke survivor, and that quote has carried me through the stroke. Never lose your hope and faith.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
All right, my love. I hope to talk to you soon. I hope we get to meet in person one day. I really enjoy your talk and your time. You are I just cherish you.
Thank you very
much,
Rusty. Thank you.
You're a beautiful soul.
So, do you have repeat guests on?
I do, but I don't have any availability until November. So, try to schedule you for around Christmas time. All right, love?
Okay, that's good. Thank you very
Perfect.
Much for the opportunity, Rusty.
You're welcome.
And when can I hear the broadcast at any point?
At any point, this is your forever link. It's there forever. So use it how you like, and it's all yours.
Okay, good. Thanks again.
Thanks, love. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. And I'm Rusty, and what a beautiful day. We got to speak to GP Walsh this morning, and gosh, Joyce Fields this afternoon. And she's written 10 books. What a crazy, amazing woman and a wealth of knowledge and inspiration. And I just love, love, love my days here with you, living and thriving, spending time with amazing souls who do amazing things just because they can. I know that you can do amazing things today. Maybe pay somebody's toll or buy a cup of coffee for somebody else. Or if you see a homeless person, maybe buy them a sandwich or say, hi, how are you? Sometimes little things speak volumes, make things bigger and better and more amazing for other people. Take the time to turn off the boob tube, take a walk, hang out with a tree, pick up a book. Authors love it when you pick us up. Hug 5 minutes longer. Sleep in 5 minutes later, drive 5 minutes slower. That's what life's about. Enjoy it. Take time. Breathe. It's beautiful. Know that I love you. Know that you're beautiful. And I can't wait to talk to you until next week, Thursday, here at Living and Thriving with Rusty. I love you. Talk to you soon.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.
You still there?